jubilation on the opposition benches, not just at being back in the debating chamber for the first time in over a month, but at inflicting another defeat on the government in a vote on a members' bill. Returning from an extra long adjournment of 4 weeks, John Key's national-led minority government immediately got reacquainted with the mathematical realities of being too short of a majority in the chamber on all votes except those involving confidence, money supply and procedure. On these votes, National's formal agreements with the two Murray Party MPs, United Future's Peter Dunn and the ACT Party's David Seymour, assure the government of 63 votes, giving it a comfortable margin over the combined opposition's 58 to pass money bills such as the budget, which began its last week in the House on Tuesday when the estimates debate ended its 11th hour just after 9 p.m. with Assistant Speaker Lindsay Tish in the chair.
Members, the ayes are 63, the noes are 58. The motion is agreed to. Members, this debate has now concluded. I'll report the Appropriation 2016-17 Estimates Bill without amendment.
Completion of the committee stage of the Appropriation 2016-17 Estimates Bill, containing the government's budget, cleared the way for its third and final reading on Thursday, launched by Finance Minister Bill English, 11 weeks after he delivered it to the House on Thursday, May the 25th.
This debate is around the estimates which, for those of the House who haven't paid too much attention, set out all the spending of the government for 2016-17.
Mr English then talked about some of the contents of his budget.
And Mr Speaker, of course, it covers a whole range of issues, including spending on issues that have been discussed quite a bit lately, one of which I will mention is housing. I thought it was notable today that the Labor Party had nothing to say about housing. And you know why? Because yesterday the government initiated the process for the biggest housing development the country has ever seen. Like, ever seen.
But the budget had nothing to say about housing either, according to the Finance Minister's Labor shadow, Grant Robertson.
The biggest political issue facing New Zealand today, and the budget was largely silent on it.
Labor's finance spokesman Grant Robertson and Finance Minister Bill English making a start on the third and final reading of the Appropriation 2016-17 Estimates Bill, better known as the budget. That's going through with the second Impress Supply Bill, giving the government spending money, and the third reading debate will come to an end next week in a vote that the government is certain to win with the help of its three support parties, two of which were to be found on the opposite side of the chamber the previous night, as Rhys Lyon reports.
Members, the ayes are 61 and the noes are 60. The motion is agreed to.
That was the Minimum Wage Contractor Remuneration Amendment Bill in the name of Labour's David Parker, passing its second reading by the closest possible margin in this 121-seat parliament. The bill passed its first reading last August by that same narrow margin of 61 votes to 60, and succeeded both times with the help of government support parties, United Future and the Māori Party, who crossed the floor to cast their votes alongside Labour, the Greens and New Zealand First, to give the bill its one-vote majority. The bill aims to ensure the right to receive a minimum wage, and speaking on behalf of David Parker on Wednesday afternoon, Labour's Ian Lees-Galloway said that that was a right which not all workers in New Zealand currently have.
Because they are engaged as contractors, not as employees. And those people are not entitled to a minimum wage, despite the fact that they may be working 5 days a week, or in a regular pattern of work, that they are receiving all of their income from one employer.
Mr Lees-Galloway said the bill was designed to benefit workers in what he called precarious positions.
Such as the delivery of flyers in particular, and newspapers actually find themselves receiving remuneration that works out at considerably lower than the minimum wage.
And the one vote majority by which that bill passed its second reading was the same margin that saw National MP Mark Mitchell's Social Security stopping benefit payments for offenders who repeatedly fail to comply with Community Sentences Amendment Bill sent off to the Social Services Committee later in the night. That one vote margin saw another opposition member's bill, the Healthy Homes Guarantee Bill No. 2, in the name of Labour leader Andrew Little, pass its first reading earlier this year. And unlike Labour MP Sue Moroney's paid parental leave bill, which had that same one vote majority right up to its final reading in June, the contractor remuneration and healthy homes bills are unlikely to attract a government financial veto. Having passed by 61 votes to 60 back in May, the Healthy Homes Guarantee Bill was sent off to the Government Administration Committee, where it was the subject of public submissions on Wednesday morning, and was also the subject of a member's question to Mr Little from his Labour colleague Phil Twyford later on Wednesday.
How does this bill differ from the current law?
Andrew Little.
Mr Speaker, the current law propagated by the present government applies only a standard for insulation at the 1978 standard and requires the installation of smoke alarms. My bill requires there to be a source of heating, requires weather tightness, requires the house to be able to be ventilated and a minimum standard on drainage. My bill will be a whole heap better.
Meanwhile, in a public submission on the bill earlier in the day, Students Association President Lindsay Higgins told the Government Administration Committee that landlords should be held to account for the quality of their rental properties.
We are of the opinion that the provision of housing is a service, and there are other services in our society where if people provide that service that makes them sick, that's completely unacceptable. And our question is, why is it acceptable for people to provide housing that makes people sick if it's unacceptable everywhere else?
The Healthy Homes Guarantee Bill was also welcomed by UNICEF Executive Director Vivian Maderborn, who suggested some changes to the bill, including clearer standards for rental properties.
We need to not have long legal arguments over what does clean air, what does well ventilated, what does heating, what are these things mean? Rather, they should be explicit standards.
Ms. Maderborn appealed to Parliament to pass the bill.
From our point of view, with those tweaks, it would be a much stronger chance of doing what it says, healthy homes guarantee, for three powerful words.
UNICEF Executive Director Vivian Maderborn with that submission on Andrew Little's Healthy Homes Guarantee Bill No. 2 to the Government Administration Committee, which is due to report it back to the House by November the 4th.
Reece Lyon, and he'll be back with more news from the committee rooms. But first, the Finance and Expenditure Committee had a visit on Thursday from Reserve Bank Governor Graham Wheeler, who explained that morning's announcement of a cut in the official cash rate to 2%.
We're concerned about the exchange rate pressures on the economy, and we would like to see some of those pressures abated, and if possible we'd like to see the exchange rate down lower.
Among questions for Graham Wheeler was one from Grant Robertson, who asked him if he expected trading banks to pass the cut on to their customers.
Well, we don't want to get into a situation of directing banks in respect of their pricing. So, you know, banks will need to decide how they allocate those cuts in lending rates. But we'll leave that to the market competitive pressures.
An hour later, Finance Minister Bill English echoed the Reserve Bank Governor's answer in his response to Grant Robertson's opening question of the day.
Fundamentally, it's our view that the competition among banks will determine how much is passed on. It's not the government's job to tell them how to run their business.
Supplementary question, Grant Robertson.
If it's not the government's job to tell banks how to run their business, why did John Key say, and I quote, if banks behave like good corporate citizens, they should pass on Reserve Bank cuts in full to their customers?
The Honourable Bill English.
Mr Speaker, because good corporate citizens do what their customers demand that they do. And that's what will happen. In the end, they will decide... how to respond to demand in the market. And New Zealanders who are worried about it can ring up their bank, demand a lower interest rate, and I'm told that they'll get it.
Mr. Robertson then asked the Finance Minister about the effect of lower interest rates on house prices.
What responsibility does he take for New Zealanders not receiving the full benefit of the OCR cut today, given the ANZ Bank statement that lowering lending rates would, quote, throw fuel on the fire in an overheated housing market?
The Honourable Bill English.
Well, Mr. Speaker, this week the primary responsibility for the housing market in New Zealand lies with the Auckland Council.
Mr. English said the Council controlled the supply of houses through its unitary plan.
That's the critical variable in the housing market, and the Auckland Council have control over that variable.
Having covered interest rates and the supply of houses, Grant Robertson asked Mr. English to address the effect on demand of increased immigration.
Does he recognise that he is now completely out of touch in ruling out a review of immigration policy settings when the Reserve Bank have now joined every opposition party and most economic commentators in saying that unsustainable levels of immigration are putting downward pressure on wages and upward pressures on housing prices?
The Honourable Bill English.
Well, Mr. Speaker, immigration policy settings are always under review.
Finance Minister Bill English in question time on Thursday, which was followed by the first reading of a tax bill containing simplification of rules for small businesses and a tightening of the administration of foreign-owned trusts in the wake of exposure of tax havens in the Panama Papers. Back now to Rhys Lyon in the committee rooms.
The Law and Order Committee's inquiry into the illegal possession of firearms kicked off on Wednesday when it heard from Firearms Safety Specialists representative Nicole McKee, who focused her submission on firearms in low socio-economic rural communities.
I think the firearms have been out there for many, many years. Some of them have been inherited. Some of them are so old. There's a lot of 303s out there that have come back from the war. There's a whole stack of them that have been around that have passed from uncle to brother to cousin continuously. So where did they come from originally? I don't know.
Nicole McKee said for the rural Māori who own firearms, hunting was a way of life.
If we can get licensed people into these rural communities and have security for their firearms, then not only do they have something to lose, but they've also gained respect and mana within their area. Then we can also encourage that good behaviour in these low socioeconomic communities.
The Law and Order Committee is due to hold two more hearings on that inquiry into illegal firearms. And on Thursday, former ACT MP Heather Roy appeared before the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Committee to make a submission on a bill implementing the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. Now representing Medicines New Zealand, Ms. Roy questioned why the government had agreed to an extension of patent rights on animal medicines but not human ones.
The size of both agricultural compounds and human medicines market in New Zealand are around the same level. They both exist at about $800 million per annum. So why then has the government agreed to five additional years of data protection period being added to animals and nothing for novel biologic medicines? We think this gap between the medicines for animals and the medicines for humans is unacceptable. Both should be at the same level. The implication, then, that New Zealand cares more about getting innovative agricultural compounds to the sheep and cows of New Zealand than they do about innovative medicines to the human population is one that could quite rightly be drawn.
Medicines New Zealand representative and former ACT MP Heather Roy with that submission on the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement Amendment Bill. Also during the week, the Health Committee announced it had received more than 21,000 submissions on former Labour MP Marion Street's petition calling for an inquiry into euthanasia, with 1,800 of those submitters requesting to be heard in person. The committee is now preparing to travel the country to get through all of those submissions, and planning those hearings is likely to be what's on the committee's agenda when it meets for 10 minutes to consider the petition next Wednesday.
That report from Rhys Lyon. Finally, Wednesday saw the first general debate for a month, the government side led by Justice Minister Amy Adams.
And isn't it nice to see my colleagues coming back in such a happy, positive, ambitious for New Zealand frame of mind, and what a contrast it provides to the nasty, bickering, angry, aggression and no hope negativity we see from the opposition.
But the negative vibe wasn't confined to the opposition benches, as the New Zealand First Party's Richard Prosser discovered when he put this question to Conservation Minister Maggie Barry.
Is it rational to believe that New Zealand can be predator-free for just $28 million of government funding over 34 years, when that total would provide less than 50 cents each for the rats and possums present this year alone.
Mr Speaker.
The Honourable Maggie Barry.
I address my answer to one of the less rational people in this House.
Order.
The amount of
order.
Money...
Order. The Minister will stand, withdraw and apologise and then just answer the question.
Withdraw and apologise, Mr Speaker.
The Speaker, David Carter, reminding Conservation Minister Maggie Barry to keep her answers pest-free. I'm Tom Frewen and this programme was made with funding from Parliament.